Hiyo gozaimasu. My name is Johnny Long. It's a pleasure to be here today. This is my first time in front of an international audience, so I'm trying to take it very slow. I have a tendency to get very animated, start talking very fast, so I request that if I'm talking too fast, if you all could just throw money at me, that would serve as a good reminder. I should slow down. My talk today is entitled, You Found That on Google. And I'm going to be talking about a technique known as Google hacking. And one of the things that I'd like to, first of all, define is the term Google hacking. There's been a lot of misunderstanding about this topic. A lot of people, especially in the hacking community, don't agree with the term Google hacking. But basically, this technique allows an attacker to find sensitive information on a website and also to help an attacker find targets. First, as an introduction, since this is a talk about Google and Google hacking, let me introduce myself with a simple Google query. Here's a Google query for the term Google hacker, which unfortunately is what I'm becoming known as. And you'll see there that the second hit under Google itself is for my website. So I guess that just defines me for some period of time. I'll be referring to my website throughout the talk. If you can't see it clearly, it's johnny.ihackstuff.com, and there's a lot of material there for you to check out after the talk. Some good reference material. First of all, this is not a new topic. I am not the originator of this technique. I'm just somebody who pulled the pieces together to make it a more modernized attack vector. This is a post from 2001. Just to give you an idea of the potential age of this, this was not the first mention of this technique. I believe that there was a reference much earlier in 97 by someone by the handle Simple Nomad, who used a technique very similar to this. His search engine of choice was AltaVista. Google probably has the largest repository of websites cached and crawled, so Google is the search engine of choice for this technique, at least for me. In order to understand how this technique works, we need to understand advanced operators. Advanced operators help you narrow down a search so that you can get to the information that you need quickly. This is the basic format for an advanced operator. It's very straightforward. It's an operator followed by a colon, followed by a search term. There are no spaces before or after the colon. Let's take a look at how advanced operators can be used. Here's a very simple URL. Again, a reference to my website. There's a couple different ways that we could search for this particular page using advanced operators. The most straightforward way is using the site operator. This focuses on a very specific website or a very specific domain. For example, site colon ihackstuff.com would be one way to find this URL. Another operator that we can use is in URL. In URL actually finds terms anywhere inside the URL. You'll notice from the circle that that also includes the site name. So in some cases, you can use in URL and site in a very similar way. For example, in URL, index.php might be one way to find this page. Sure. Also notice that the port number in this particular URL, technical difficulty. Can you hear me now? Good. Okay, is this better? All right. Notice that this in URL operator, I've also circled the port number of the web server. Obviously, port 80, the colon 80, is not a requirement. Most web servers listen on port 80. But as we'll see later, we can use this operator to search for specific ports that are listening on a server. One other way that we could find this URL is with the file type operator. The file type is simply the extension of the program that is used to display the page. In this case, file type colon PHP might be one way to find this page. Obviously, there are a lot of PHP pages out on the web, so you need to combine these operators to get an effective search. Last but not least, we could also focus on the title of the page with the inTitle operator. Using inTitle, we can search for key phrases or words within the title of the page. For example, we could search for in title colon and the word Johnny with a zero. Might be one way to find this page. Let's take it a step further. Here's a screenshot of my web page, and we've already talked about some ways that we can find my URL. Here's how we could bring it all together. First of all, file type colon PHP. We've already talked about that. Let's combine operators to find searches that will specifically target my page. In title, we've already talked about, but take a look at how this operator is used. We've actually placed a phrase within double quotes. The phrase is, I hack stuff. So we can use an advanced operator not only with a word, but with a phrase as well. Another thing that we can use is the operator numRange. NumRange can be followed by an individual number or sequence of numbers. The purpose of this operator is to find a specific number written on a web page, or to find a document that contains a specific number. For example, the number that we're looking for on this page, 33335. So the numRange operator that we're using here finds this pretty accurately. The numRange operator is probably the most abused operator out of all the advanced operators. And although I'm not going to go out and say it exactly, if you use your imagination, you can think of lots of sensitive numbers that you could locate with this operator. Since Black Hat's about digital defense, I think we'll skip the examples on this one. At least until Black Hat changes their name to digital offense. Another operator that we're going to take a look at is inText. InText specifies a specific phrase within the text of the document or the text of the web page. Very straightforward. InText is somewhat redundant. Just typing a phrase into the Google search engine automatically implies inText. Let's take it one step further. This is what Google hacking might look like. Here we have a specific URL. Let me show you a Google search that will help us find the specific URL. in URL colon admin, in URL colon orders, file type colon PHP. Basically using all three of these together as one Google search will find pages with URLs that look just like this one. This is where it gets interesting. The content of pages like this contains sensitive information. As you can see here, this is an orders page for an e-commerce site. Online sales, things like that. This particular page shows sensitive information in the form of purchases that were made online and customer information. So in essence, we supply one Google query to find pages that may contain sensitive information. Beyond advanced operators, I just want to talk very quickly about special characters and how they apply to Google. I'm only going to look at a couple of these. First of all, the plus sign. Plus sign, as you see here, forces Google to search for a specific word. Google, by default, will refuse to search for very common words. In fact, Google will ignore that word completely. Using the plus symbol, you can actually get Google to forcibly search for that particular common word. We'll see some examples of that. The minus sign is the opposite. Very simple stuff. Don't search for this word. Again, no spaces follow these special characters. The or symbol down at the bottom there, the pipe symbol. Very straightforward again. Find this word or this word. Okay? And you can combine these with special operators, as we'll see later. Also, the dot or the period. It's very important to remember that this is somewhat of a shorthand because the dot can stand for any character. Could be a space, could be anything. Most of the time it refers to a space. All right, let's talk about some of the techniques that a Google hacker might use. The site operator can be used to crawl a web page or a website. The idea here is, with one query, you can find out every single page that Google knows about for a specific server. For example, site colon Microsoft.com returns 583,000 hits. So an attacker can supply one query and basically go through Microsoft's websites and look at their information. Very basic. If you're interested in finding out the other types of servers that Microsoft.com might be using by name, you can use this query. Site colon Microsoft.com minus site colon www.microsoft.com. This simply says, find all the websites at Microsoft that don't start with www. You'll see in this particular example, office.microsoft.com, msdn.microsoft.com. This lets an attacker profile a network. Very basic technique. A directory listing is a very important tool for a Google attacker. Basically, a directory listing looks sort of like an FTP server with directories and files. And Google hackers will actually find these pages with index of, the phrase index of. For example, in title index of admin. The term index of almost always appears with a directory listing. So using a directory listing combined with specific phrases, an attacker can find files or directories that match a certain profile. There's a good chance that this particular directory listing has administrative data, hence the word admin. In some cases, these directory listings can be used to actually profile a server. If an attacker has an exploit or a tool for a specific type of web server, a Google query can be used to find targets that might be vulnerable to that exploit. For example, in title index.of, we're searching for a directory listing, Apache space server.at. We're looking for the phrase server at. This will find Apache servers simply because of the fact that a directory listing, in many cases, especially Apache-based web servers, lists the server version at the bottom of the directory listing. We'll see more about this later. Default server pages, another tool that an attacker can use. Oftentimes, when a web server is installed, it comes with a set of default pages, so that an administrator can tell if the web server was installed properly. An attacker can search for these default pages to find default configurations of web servers, which also might suggest that they are insecure. For example, this is a default page for Apache. You'll notice it has the phrase, "it worked." This is a fairly unique phrase. So an attacker could use a query that looks for that phrase to find default Apache installations. This can become very specific. In fact, an attacker can actually go against a very specific version or subversion of a web server by modifying the string that tags that server or the page that's installed when the software is installed on the server. For example, here's some other default pages. Netscape. Netscape Fast Track. In this particular case, we are strictly looking for a phrase in the title of the page because the Netscape Fast Track server uses a unique phrase in the title of their default pages. Netscape Enterprise, very similar. Again, we're looking for different variations of the same type of thing, default pages, looking for specific types of servers. Here's an example that looks for IIS running on Windows 2000. Again, welcome to Windows 2000 Internet Services. It's a phrase that appears in the title of the page. And as you can see from the results, this is a very targeted search, very specific, and finds default installations of IIS. In this case, not only did we find the web server version, we've also discovered the operating system. Bear in mind that an attacker using Google doesn't actually touch the target site. These are just Google queries. Many of you are aware that you can do the same sort of thing by touching the server directly using any number of methods. The idea here is we're just having a conversation with Google. No packets hit the target site. Here we have IIS running on Windows XP. Welcome to Windows XP Internet Services. Again, we're looking for that default phrase on a default page. IIS 4.0. How many of you are aware of the current version number for IIS? Here's a hint. It's bigger than 4. In fact, IIS 4.0 is a very old version of IIS, and simply because of its age, it's potentially vulnerable. We can see here that we have 66 hits for this particular version of web server, which is very old. On top of being old, it's got a default set of pages, which means it's probably neglected. It's a good target for an attacker. Another way that an attacker could profile a web server or search for default installations of a web server is with the documentation that comes with that web server software. For example, Apache. The Apache 1.3 series comes with a default set of manuals, which are HTML documents. An attacker can actually search for distinct phrases in that documentation to find default installs of servers. This is just a screenshot. We're going to talk more about this particular database as we get farther into the talk. But what we see here are other strings that can be used to find default servers. And this is from a database that's been termed the Google Hacking Database. We'll talk more about that in a bit. Another way that an attacker can profile a web server is via error messages. Error messages that are presented have a unique flavor. You can search for those error messages to determine a specific server's version number to get information about that server. For example, here, this error message actually lists the specific version of software that's running along with a lot of other information. This particular error message also lists information about the software that's running behind the web server, specifically the database server. We'll talk more about hacking databases later in the talk. But you can see here that this particular Oracle database, we can get information about that database via the error messages that the web server produces. For example, we see not only the administrator's name, we see the Oracle path names, various information about the Oracle server. This is a picture of my Hotmail account, which hopefully I've edited properly. We can see on the right-hand side here that we have an error message. The reason I show this is that an error message can pop up just about anywhere, even in a Hotmail session or a very popular web email solution. This particular error popped up when a banner was attempted to be displayed. So what we can see is we can see information about the back-end system that produces banners for the site. Error messages are often overlooked as a source of information gathering. Another thing I'd like to talk about quickly is login portals. It's basically a term that I use to describe a page, a web page, that asks for a username or a password that gives you access to a specific type of software. If you have an exploit for a specific type of software, you can find targets for that exploit by searching for the login page for that software. Also, you can profile a target to figure out what type of software it's running by looking at these login pages. This is a very simple search. The search is, "Please log in." A very common phrase presented to a user before asking for their username and password. You'll see here we have 2.4 million results. Very generic phrase. Another very generic query is to look for the word admin followed by logon.asp. This is an ASP logon script. Very straightforward. This is a page that will probably ask for a username and password. We can use these pages for information gathering. I'm going to fly through these just to give you an example of the types of things that you can search for. ColdFusion, MX Administrator Login Page. Here's a query that will help find it. It's actually a very simple query. ColdFusion Administrator Login appearing in the title of the page. Windows Remote Desktop, very secure, though it may be. This phrase will help you find people who have installed Microsoft's Windows Remote Desktop, and their page was consequently crawled by Google. Remote Desktop Web Connection appears in the title. Again, very good for information gathering. Citrix MetaFrame Login, another example. Microsoft Outlook Web Access. A lot of portals, a lot of login portals, have a lot more behind the scenes than what you can get from the front page. For example, if you know a little bit about how Microsoft Outlook's web access functions, you know that simply finding this page, indicating that the software is installed, there are a lot of things that could be behind the scenes. So an attacker will typically find a target, like these Microsoft Outlook web access targets, go outside of Google into their browser and type in some URLs to maybe take a stab at what might be on that server. For example, with Outlook and Exchange, it's very, very easy to find your way to a public directory that helps you find users of that email system. Most people don't even realize that there is a public directory or how to configure it, and attackers can use that to their advantage. For example, they can use that directory to look up users at that particular location to get usernames. The usernames can then be used in another attack. Okay, I get a lot of friendly ribbing from some of the other speakers and hackers in general that, you know, Google can't be used for hacking. And I'll admit, it seems rather far-fetched. It is a search engine, and what we've seen so far isn't really hacking. So I thought it would be interesting to take some typical hacking techniques and translate them into Google. See how a Google user might use some of these techniques. I'll be the first to admit that some of this is meant to be humorous. Obviously, there are easier ways to do these things. But in a lot of cases, it's a good translation. For example, password cracking. The idea behind it is fairly simple. You try to guess the password for a user account. The way you go about it, so there's a lot of different ways to go about it. Here's one way, using Google. This screen says, here's information about your user ID. So on the left, we see that the user ID has 6 digits. We get some information there. And on the right-hand side of the screen, we see your password is also 6 characters long. So we get information about the password. This particular screen goes on to say that the password consists of part of your first name and part of your last name. So this makes password cracking a lot easier for an attacker. However, sometimes it just gets handed to an attacker. This is one example. Here's an example of hacking into a PBX switch using Google. We see here the access numbers for the PBX, and we also see the first time your password is just the pound sign. So an attacker is led to the PBX via the phone number, and they're given information about the default password. So they could try accounts or extensions on that PBX just trying the pound sign for a password. This is a very long search, but this very long Google search actually finds sites that allow for a very interesting option. When you click on the URL for the results that are returned from Google, an interesting thing happens. The administrator password and user account is deleted, and a new one is created. So you type in a Google query, you click on any of the search results, and you just created an administrative account for yourself. think this makes hacking pretty available to just about anybody. These pages, this is an example of another Google query. Again, when you click on these results from this particular query, notice the word adding new user in the title. This gives you a bit of an idea of what we're about to see. You find pages that let you set up your own email account on a specific server. Type in a Google query, click on a URL, you have a free email account. In most cases, this is because of a misconfiguration on the server. Or at least I'd like to think these are misconfigurations. And sometimes hacking is a lot easier than it needs to be. In this particular example, the username and the password both appear in clear text inside the title of the page. Also, the URL where the username and the password is accepted is also displayed. And finding these was as simple as one Google query for a file called password.log. PHP shell, and go through this one fairly quickly because I want to get to some of the really good stuff towards the end here. PHP shell is a PHP program that you can put on your web server that gives users access to a Unix shell simply by connecting to the PHP page. Obviously, this is a bad idea. An attacker can simply find this page, connect to the page, and in some cases, actually get shell access to that server. This is an administrative nightmare, obviously. But one of the things that I like to talk about is sort of showing how an attacker would find PHP shell installations, as is the case here. They type in Unix commands, which you can see here in the command box. Cat the etsy password file. And you'll see in this screen that the contents of the password file are revealed, showing that these queries actually found live shells that are active on the web. Now, this is in the Google hacking section, this is in the hacking section because this is the end result of a lot of attacks, to get to a shell where you can actually type in commands, do all sorts of nasty things. But with Google, it's fairly easy. This particular hacker, through lots of exploration, found all sorts of interesting things, found files and all sorts of things, but pretty sure he was very excited when he found pages of Britney Spears on the web server, and that was probably just as good to him as the shell account. Gives us an idea of his nationality, maybe, too. All right. This section is called vulnerability trolling. And actually, this is very common. And even the most hardcore hackers that really despise even the concept of using Google to hack will agree that Google has its place when it comes to finding vulnerable servers. In fact, that's expressed in advisories lately, especially web server advisories or web software advisories, where a Google query will be listed that shows examples of the software. For example, here's a vulnerability that was released with Confix. And even if it's not handed to you in the form of a Google query, an attacker can go to the Confix website to get an idea of what the software looks like. If he can see a demonstration of the software, a Google hacker could piece together a query to find potential targets. Here on the SWSoft website, we see a nice link for a demo. We go ahead and click that. And a Google hacker is going to be drawn to the title of this particular page for the demonstration of the software, which lists the words Confix Professional in the title, which makes for a very good Google query. Other ways that the attacker can find vulnerable servers is by downloading the software and seeing what files are included with the software that might appear on the web server. For example, in this case, we can see that there are manuals that come with the software that are installed on the web server, much like Apache. So an attacker now has two ways to find vulnerable servers based on this one vulnerability. And of course, the attacker can use any one of these techniques to find potential targets. Here's one way to find the target using login portals, which we talked about. These are the login screens for Confix Professional. So the end result of this demonstration is that with a Google query like in title Confix with the words login and password finds Confix installations that an attacker can use for exploit. Here's another example. This is vBulletin 3.0.0. This was a vulnerability that was released that actually said, here is the software version and the specific release candidate that's vulnerable. So just turning that into a Google query is very straightforward. And on the day that the vulnerability is released, simply by typing a good query into Google, an attacker has access to 2,850 potential targets. All right, let's take a look at some more hacking techniques, Google style. Is anyone familiar with CGI scanning or CGI scanner programs? CGI scanners? Okay. CGI scanners look for vulnerable programs on a web server. We can do this with Google very simply. CGI scanners list files and directories that are potentially hazardous. A Google hacker can take this list of potentially vulnerable programs found in a CGI scanner and turn them into Google queries very easily, as we can see here. Some dangerous entries up top. In the middle, some Google queries that will actually help us find those potentially bad pieces of software. And again, you can see we use either in URL or in title, index of, to find these programs. Port scanning, we talked about port scanning a little bit when we mentioned the in URL operator. You can search for open ports on a server with the in URL operator. Because remember, in URL will also search the port number if it's in the URL. So we can use creative in URL searches to find open ports on a web server. Now obviously running a tool like Nmap or any decent port scanner is going to do a better job. But remember, we're not sending any packets to the target. Just some quick examples, port 5800, VNC desktop, the WebMin program, a web-based administrative program, port 10,000. other default web server ports, 8080, port 8000. There are also some other interesting ways that we can do this. We won't go too much into the details here in the interest of time. But another way to port scan using Google is to locate web-based utilities that could do the job for you. For example, the NQT tool, Network Query Tool, allows you to enter a host name or an IP address and a port number. And it will tell you if that port is open on that server. So this is getting another program to do the scanning for you. And by extension, we can search for this program with a Google search. In URL nqt.php. Shows us 89 sites that are running this tool that an attacker could use to do a port scan for himself. Again, found with Google. Automation. Obviously, it's a lot faster to get a tool to do the scanning for you. It makes sense. Instead of sitting at the Google homepage and typing in your searches manually, it makes sense to automate them. The bad news is Google doesn't like automation. In fact, they explicitly state you cannot automate your queries. They don't like it. And in the past, they've blocked whole ranges of IP addresses from accessing their search engine because of automated queries. So Google makes available an API that lets you program Google searches. The downside of the API is that the language base is limited. There aren't many programming languages available. And you can only do 1,000 queries a day. There are some tools I'd just like to highlight quickly. One tool is Athena by Steve Lords. This tool does not use the Google API. Using this tool could get you blocked from using Google. I'm sure you're all still interested in using it anyway. Carefully. This tool doesn't use the API, but it also doesn't automate queries. What it does is it gives you a list of potential queries that a Google hacker might use, allows you to specify the site, for example, your site, to see if your site has any references in Google to this bad phrase. It does it one at a time. You click the phrase, you submit it. Click the phrase, you submit it. Very arduous, very tedious. Here's another tool called GooScan. This is also not an API-based tool. It runs in Unix, Linux-based machines, Mac OS. For example, here's a list of queries that can be run through the tool. It's very fast. Very fast. Thousands of queries in a matter of minutes. Very fast. Okay? It's also bad news for Google, and your use of this tool could potentially cause Google not to like you very much. As such, this GooScan tool is released for educational purposes only, and it is intended to be used by people who are interested in scanning their own sites. For example, you own a web server, you'd like to know what your Google exposure is. Google generally won't come after you for using the tool like this against your own site. It does use their resources, however, and they do have the right to turn you off. This is an example of the report outputted from GooScan. It simply lists the hacking query. It shows you the number of results that were found and provides you a link to Google's page so that you can go through the results. Obviously, if there are zero results, there's nothing worth looking at. Another tool is SiteDigger from Foundstone. And this is probably the best tool to use if you're interested in Google not coming after you, because it uses the API. Remember, however, that you're still limited to 1,000 queries a day, and as we'll see a bit later on, 1,000 queries might not be enough. Let's talk about breaking databases. Let me check my time here. All right, I've titled this section Poking, Prodding, and Pummeling SQL. Three different levels of beating up on SQL using Google. This is fairly straightforward. One of the things that we can do with Google is we can actually look for usernames that we could use against a database, an SQL database. For example, this query uses an error message produced by SQL to harvest usernames. So with this query on the bottom here, we can actually get an idea of the username that you could use to access an SQL database. Again, a username isn't that big of a deal. This query will actually locate SQL dumps. These SQL dumps contain, in many cases, the entire contents of a database. And this string sits at the top of an SQL dump. Dumping data for table. It's a unique phrase. There's various information you can find in here. In many cases, you can find usernames and passwords. It's not very often that you'll actually find a live SQL dump that has clear text usernames and passwords. So I try not to make too big of a deal out of this one. Unfortunately, sometimes these dumps do contain usernames and passwords, and as far as your Google query is concerned, it's very easy to narrow that down. You simply provide your phrase, dumping data for table, and you also look for the name, for the words username and password. Let's take it a step further. SQL injection has become very popular. It's become arguably one of the most talked about methods of attacking a web application that uses a database backend. Some error messages that are displayed on a page when Google crawls the page indicate that that machine may be susceptible to an SQL injection. This error message is a classic example of that. SQL command not properly ended. In most cases, this means there wasn't a semicolon or something that followed a command. In other cases, it means you're missing a quote when a query was submitted. So an attacker can compensate for this by actually modifying the query to that application to finish the SQL statement, inserting any commands that they'd like. Another example, unclosed quotation mark before the character string, discover platinum card, which sounds like it might be a problem. Unclosed quotation mark again. Again, a good sign that there's a bad piece of SQL code, and an attacker can insert commands. Unfortunately, you see here that the problem occurred before Mrs. Prisby's second grade class, which I try to encourage people not to attack Mrs. Prisby's second grade class. So that's just bad form. Another thing that's very interesting about error messages, especially as they're generated from SQL, is the potential for pieces of the SQL code to leak out in the error message. That's one thing an SQL attacker is very interested in, pieces of the actual SQL code to help them understand exactly how to formulate their attack. So here's an example of a Google query that will help you find error messages that generate pieces of SQL code. Here's another one that actually lists very long pieces of SQL code. In some cases, these queries will actually show you a whole lot of SQL code. Obviously, an attacker seeing the source code, especially if it's not coded properly, is a problem. Okay, this is a section where we talk about beating the crap out of SQL. This is the last stage of SQL attacking from Google hackers. phpMyAdmin is a web-based front end for SQL databases. It helps administrators administer an SQL database. It's very easy to use. Unfortunately, an attacker can actually look for installations of this program, like this query will, welcome to phpMyAdmin with main.php in the URL. Shows us screens like this. Other error messages, especially some cold fusion error messages, dump huge portions of SQL code to the extent that they will dump the entire list of SQL commands contained in a file. This is one query that helps us find places that this has occurred. You'll notice what we're actually looking at is we're looking at the error string itself, and we're looking for specific words. The word where, select or insert, all SQL commands. In this case, we're also looking for the file type CFM for cold fusion. Another way that a Google attacker could go after SQL is by looking for specific function calls, like this particular function call, MySQL Connect. MySQL Connect is an indicator that a program is about to connect to a database. It's supplying a username and a password, and you'll notice the username and the password is actually listed in that piece of code. This is a way to actually go after SQL passwords themselves. Going after the string identified by is one way. It's SQL syntax that says, here is the password that I'm about to set for this user. So by searching for SQL files with file type and the phrase identified by, we can actually find instances where an SQL password is listed. Another way to do this, and this is a little more of a complicated example, look for identified by, but also look for the phrase create user or grant star on, which looks for creations of users or application of SQL privileges to a user. We'll also show you the password. This is another example. In this particular case, we're going after SQL passwords that are listed in the clear file type properties. These are properties files that list database, in some cases, database passwords. You'll see from the screenshots that I've highlighted some examples where it actually lists the password in clear text. I actually decided to show some quick examples of ways that Google hackers can actually pick on security people, people that do security for a living. Here's one way, actually searching for certificates. Certificates are authentication mechanisms. Private certificates are supposed to be private. Unfortunately, if they got crawled by Google, in most cases, they're no longer private. Here's a query that will find all sorts of certificates, actually list them out for you. some more private keys. Begin RSA private key. There are a lot of examples on these on the web that are actually examples. They're not live keys. One of the gifts of a decent Google hacker is being able to separate the signal from the noise to get to the real stuff. It's fairly straightforward. Security people like running scans. You know, Nessus. Nessus is a great scanner. I like Nessus. When you run Nessus, it gives you a list of the vulnerabilities on your servers. It's a roadmap for an attacker. Not many security people I know would run a Nessus scan and then give it to their attackers and say, here's all my vulnerabilities. It just doesn't make sense. Unfortunately, people do that in some cases, but looking for these files can be sometimes difficult. For example, a key phrase, this file was generated by Nessus. Okay, unfortunately, this doesn't come up with very good results. For example, my website is first in the list. That's not a good sign. And in some cases, people will post these as sample files. However, in many cases, these reports are online and they are live scans from live networks on the internet. This particular example was found on a user's home web server. It was a Nessus scan of their corporate network, and it was the full documentation of the entire scan. The red is bad. Another popular scanner is ISS. ISS is a decent scanner. Same thing applies. The report from these scanners shouldn't be online. They are. There are a lot of test scans. There are a lot of live scans. This particular scan listed 1,300 live usernames for a system. And the usernames actually matched to email accounts that were on the system that were verified, indicating this was a live scan. This sort of stuff shouldn't be online. Unfortunately, it is. This is one of my favorites. ACID is a front-end tool for the SNORT intrusion detection system. Now, I'm all for having an intrusion detection system on your network. It's a great idea. It's like being a store owner, putting a video camera in your store, looking for intruders. That's a great idea. It's an intrusion detection system. Okay, but taking your intrusion detection system logs and putting them on the web is like taking the video camera from your store and the monitor that shows the output from that video camera and putting the monitor in the window. Okay, so the attacker comes up to your store, tiptoes up very quietly, looks around, sees a monitor there and sees himself on it. Looks up, sees the camera, moves over to the side, and sees that the camera can't see him anymore, and then he breaks into your store. It's the same thing. If an attacker can see what you see when he's trying to break into your system, he's not going to do that. These things are online. They're live. Another example is finding SSH host keys. Can be very telling. This one's pretty bad. PGP encryption. PGP encryption works because you have a private key that you're not supposed to give anyone. This query actually finds PGP private keys online so that an attacker can decrypt any communication with your keys. I have a section in here, since we picked on security people a little bit, I have a section in here about going after hackers as well, just so that we have fair and balanced reporting. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip over some of this. Interesting things through here are actually getting IRC logs, finding passwords for people who are on IRC to protect their identity. Okay. This particular example, let's get into some very sensitive data. Some sites will lock down pages through the web server software. For example, a 403 forbidden, as shown in the top screen, says, that page you just tried to access, I don't want you there. Gives you an error message, tells you to go away. The second screen is the same page, but this time the user clicked on the cached link from Google, which is a saved image of the page. And as you'll see from these two screens, they're very different. In fact, the bottom screen shows the content of the page, and I've edited it. That's not some strange alien font. But I left some key words up there. The word email, the word visa, and the word expiration date. Potential credit card information. We'll talk about ways that you can lock down your site to sort of prevent this from happening. But let's talk about how this sort of thing happens. I mean, how does potential credit card information get online in the first place? Let's talk about some of the possibilities. Especially in the United States, when there is a public court case, some of the records from a public court case are online, especially in the case of fraud, where it involves lots of different banks and institutions. Here's output from an example case. And in a fraud case, they'll actually list all the banks and the account numbers and everything else that was associated with that particular case. So this is one way that potential account information, banking information, credit cards could get online. Now, fortunately, since these are fraud cases, a lot of these accounts are closed. Or at least we hope they're closed. Some other ways that credit card numbers could get online, and I tell people stuff like this, and they don't believe it until they actually see it, but some people put their credit card numbers online on purpose. This person's trying to buy corn snakes. Not sure exactly what a corn snake is. It's a snake, but I do know that this particular person posted their request to purchase corn snakes on a public news group, saying, please send your smallest corn snake, send it to my address, charge it to my credit card with this account number and this expiration date to a public news group. It's sad, but it happens. I'm not sure if this person actually got their corn snake. Here's another example. This person's trying to apply for a shell account online for their son. I want to buy a shell account for my son. So here's the login name that I'd like for the account and the password for my son. And here's my credit card information, expiration date, and my address. Again, posted to a public news group. Some people just don't understand that this is going out to the entire world. Here's another example. This is somebody trying to buy software online. Again, this was sort of the comments field of a site where you can actually go in like a guest book and you can write some things in there. They put their credit card number in there. Here's someone posting their expense account online, listing all their banking information. Here's a person. How much time do we have? 20 minutes? 20? Okay. I'm actually gonna read this, and unfortunately the text was originally in German, and I translated it to English using Babelfish. And I hope the translation to Japanese works very well, because there's some humor to this. This was posted to a public message group. This person says, "Good day. I have no small problem." As we'll see, that's a bit of an understatement. This person's having trouble with their software, and they say, "I entered the serial number of my software, which they list there." Okay, first of all, that's a bad idea, because now the whole world has their serial number and they can use it for the software. Unfortunately, it gets worse. The message says the serial number is wrong. How can I fix this? I purchased the software on the 23rd using my Visa account number with an expiration date of, and lists it all right there. Okay, now, nobody write that number down. I don't want to see any pencils. Be honest. I modified it. It won't work. But it demonstrates the point. Some people just don't understand. Some people just don't get it. Question that I like to ask is, are police records online in the U.S.? I'm not sure how this is in Japan, but I can say that the answer for the U.S. is yes, in fact, police reports are a matter of public record, and they are online in some cases. Some states in the U.S. have begun posting police crime reports online at schools. The argument is that students at that school have a right to know about crime on campus. It makes sense. If I was attending a class, I'd like to know if there was a robbery, you know, or if I'm in danger. Okay, it makes sense. Here's an example of one from a police department. And I did a lot of really heavy editing, so it's not you. You don't have to wipe your eyes. I'm trying to make this as benign as possible here. This is a police department crime log that is talking about petty theft. It was a robbery. Somebody had their wallet stolen, and inside the wallet was their Visa card and their Discover card, their credit cards. The problem with this police report is that this officer was very thorough, and he listed the account numbers and expiration dates of every single credit card that was in this person's wallet. And if that wasn't bad enough, because it happened on campus, students have a right to know about crime, the police report ends up online, on the web. So apparently this person was the victim of multiple crimes. Some of them inflicted by the people that were charged with protecting them. Now, if this seems far-fetched, you're probably right. I mean, how many examples of this can there be? Well, for this particular educational institution, there are 28 police crime reports online that list credit card numbers. 28 from one institution. And most of the police reports are logs of a week's worth of activity. Another way credit information gets online, expense reports. People simply list their credit card information, their bank account information. They keep it in a spreadsheet or in a file so that they can access it. Unfortunately, it gets online and Google crawls it. Bank account numbers. Bank loan information. And all sorts of things. Purchases for staplers, and somebody is on a very tight budget. Purchases for dog food. Now, the thing that I didn't mention is This wasn't a personal expense report. This was an expense report generated by the state government, listing expenses incurred from the state government and the account information that was listed. Not sure why the state government is buying dog food, but it's there. Now, as an aside, I will mention that these examples of very sensitive information, we make an effort to actually inform these people that this stuff's out there. Okay, the ultimate goal here is to raise the awareness so that people don't get burned by this stuff. One of the ways that we do it is when we discover something like that, we inform the site administrators that this information is out there. In too many cases, the administrators come back to us and say, we violated their privacy and we are, in effect, criminals. So, unfortunately, the warnings have fallen on deaf ears. But I'm here to say that the rumor about credit card numbers being online is absolutely true. Let's just take a look at a handful of examples here. Here we have credit card number listings. Okay. MasterCard, Visa, expiration dates, page after page of them. Visa, MasterCard, expiration dates, Visas, credit cards. 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 My hand's getting tired. Credit cards. 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 I'm going to have to bring over the other laptop. I'm running out of hard drive space. We proudly accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express, we take them all. Okay, in order to use these cards, unfortunately, you need more than the number and you need more than the expiration. You need the CVV code, the validation code. All right, well, how about some CVV codes? Visas with CVV codes. MasterCards with CVV codes. MasterCard. How about checking account information with rounding numbers, bank information, direct deposit information? It's all online. PayPal IDs, eBay IDs, passwords, social security numbers. It's all there. In the U.S., the 19-digit number you should never give away is your social security number. With that number, people can steal your identity. That number should never be online. It is online. It's online in source code. It's online in police reports. Not only that, driver's license numbers, police reports, social security numbers, schools. As a student ID, schools use your social security number to identify you. So when they post your grades online, they post your social security number with your grades. Page after page after page of these things. And in some cases, not only will they list your SOCH, they'll list your name along with your SOCH. Social security numbers. This is a document about a county in the U.S. that listed people who didn't pay their water bills. In an attempt to get their money for the water, the county produced a report that listed all the violators' names, addresses, social security numbers, and how much they owed the county. This report landed online. Circled are the social security numbers of the offenders. It's not a small report. Several hundred county residents with their Social Security numbers, names, and addresses listed on the web through no fault of their own personal information. The bottom line is, anybody can be a victim of this. This is a problem that's universal. Whether or not you run a website, your personal information could be online. So the reason we're presenting this talk is, first of all, to give you some awareness so that you at least have an understanding that this is a threat, to give you some idea of ways that you can prevent this form of information leakage from websites that you control, and to give you an idea of some of the things that you can do. The website that I listed earlier, my personal website, lists around 700 different queries that you can submit to Google that will find sensitive information. It's been pulled together into a database called the Google Hacking Database, which is free to download and interfaces with tools like Athena, SiteDigger, GooseScan, all the tools that we sort of outlined, so that you can download the contents of this database, which is updated daily. It's supported by a forum of over 4,000 members. You can use these queries to search your site for this type of information leakage. Also, you can log on to the forums there to sort of keep up on some of the techniques that a Google hacker might use. It's not a bad idea if you have a website to use a very simple query, site colon the name of your site or domain, page through the results. I encourage you to do this at least once, just to get an idea of the types of things that Google has already crawled on your site. I will warn you, though, Google typically will not let you see more than about 2,000 of the results. In reality, things start to get messy after that point. So, in some cases, the site query needs to be modified to reduce some common things that might show up in the query. But at least do this once. Have an idea of what Google has already crawled. Obviously, automation is a good way to go. If you don't want Google on your back, if you don't want to be blocked from their search engine, use the tool SiteDigger, because it's approved by Google, it uses their API. Some very basic things. First of all, Google has several utilities they make available for removing pages that contain information that you don't want Google to have in their database. There's all sorts of resources. But the simplest and most effective way to keep Google from going into certain directories is to use a robots.txt file. I'm not going to give you specific details here, but Google for robots.txt and get your answer on how to do that. You can also use two meta tags in your documents. One is the no archive tag. The other one is the no snippet tag. These two tags keep Google from caching copies of your documents. Also, we've mentioned it already, but keep up with basically what the Google hackers out there are doing, the sorts of new techniques that they've come up with. Check in on that on a decent basis and try to figure out what's new. Be on the lookout for a book that I'm authoring. Should be out in December on this topic. Specifically, it's Google Hacking for Penetration Testers, for security people. Talks about all these techniques in more detail, talks about ways that you can help secure your clients or yourself from these types of techniques. Goes into a lot more detail. Also, I'd like to thank my company and basically the entire security community, which is borderless and international. Gotten help from a lot of people that I really look up to. So thanks for your support. And also the Google Masters list. These are the people that run the forums that keep the Google hacking database running. And my last list of thank yous, thanks to God for the gift of life, my wife for the gift of love, my kids for the gift of laughter, and my friends for filling in the blanks. And that's it. Thank you.